You're listening to 88 Smiles Per Hour.
Let's do this!
I got a cheese delivery for Ryan Smile.
Hola, you beautiful people, and welcome to 88 Smiles Per Hour. I'm your host, Ryan Smile, as usual. This is episode 3. Little bit of a delay on getting this one out. However, I've had a lot to deal with, shows and a trip to Dublin and all sorts of crazy shit. However, episode 3 is here and it's worth the wait. We are here with SWA promoter Simon Brown. If you don't know about SWA, that's perfectly fine because you know what? Everyone is going to know about SWA by the end of this podcast. And if you didn't know about SWA up to now, you do not know what you've been missing. SWA has been one of those promotions that came from a position where they were a small promotion to their last event, which is Summer Blowout, which I was featured on, as well as Tyler Bate versus Jay Lethal. Hands down, the best live match I have ever witnessed, ever. SWA has the best crowd that I've ever worked in front of. They're my favourite crowd in the whole 6 years of wrestling that I've been dancing around in spandex. SWA has one of the best crowds that I've ever worked in front of, and a lot of people will reiterate this as well. So we're going to talk a lot with Simon Brown about the rise of SWA and about all of the different bits and pieces that he's been doing in professional wrestling too. However, talk to me. What have you guys been up to? Tell me what's going on in your lives. Are you going to any shows this weekend? And if you are, where are you going? You can check us out on Facebook. Facebook.com/88smilesperhour, and it's exactly the same on Twitter at 88 smiles per hour as well. And remember, if you want to help us help you help me help them to help you to help us, just click on that Amazon banner. Go to www.88smilesperhour.com and do all of your normal shopping through Amazon. It's going to cost you the exact same amount that you will now. You won't be charged anything extra, I promise you. However, when you check out via our Amazon banner on the top of that page, Amazon will kick back a little bit of money to the podcast so we can continue to grow our productions. Also, if you don't really want to use Amazon and you want to help and actually want to support and donate to the podcast, there is a support and donate button which you can do via PayPal, and it accepts all major credit cards. That's also on the top of the page too. Also, I've been talking about the worst wrestling trip I ever had from like over a month ago now, when we went to O2 Newcastle for Target Wrestling. And I've been talking about wanting to do this podcast forever, but Chris Brooks was in fucking Germany and we haven't had a chance to do the podcast, but that is coming. But however, it got worse. Because a couple of weeks ago, we travelled down to Torquay. That's myself, Dan Maloney, and the Hunter brothers, Lee and Jim. And on the way back, the van broke down. And it was another Saturday night. And at this point in time, I am 100% sure that I am officially cursed. So travelling to Hereford or Worcester or wherever it's going to be this Saturday for Iron Fist Wrestling should be interesting. Let's see if Damien's car breaks down on Saturday. But we are going to roll this podcast out for you. Going to get myself and Chris Brooks on one. And then we're going to get myself, the Hunter Brothers, and Dan Maloney all around this microphone shooting some shit in the place for each and every one of you so you can hear about my worst journeys and take pity on me. Hopefully you'll take pity on me. I'm not sure. I mean, I wouldn't pity someone. The stories are quite funny. The thought of Ryan Smile, Mr. Hashtag Super Diva, Mr. Hashtag Diva Fit, sitting on the hard shoulder at ridiculous o'clock in the morning, wrapped in a foil blanket, is absolutely hilarious. In a t-shirt and a pair of shorts and Toms. It's brilliant. But we're going to get into those. We're going to tell you all about that. Also, the next podcast I have coming up is with Tom Rusan. Tom Rusan, known as Lord Graham Thomas, the promoter of Wrestling Midlands, the ever controversial Tom Rusan. Anyone knows about him knows about the Steve Corino moment. Well, we have part one, which will be coming up. As you know, 88 Smiles Per Hour has some great sponsors in the Too Much Girls, Indestructible Personal Training, Done Deal Promotions, and Custom Cunts. Feel free, please show them some love on Twitter and on Facebook. If you go to www.88smilesperhour.com now, you can find out how you can like and share, and you can check out some of the great services that they have to offer. They are the best sponsors in the world, and you should check them out. Like their pages, follow them on Twitter, and do it right now. So, are you looking for a professional ring hire from a reliable source who's going to give you not only a great punctual service, but is going to give you a great price? Well, stop. Stop looking, look no further. Head over to www.dunedealpromotions.com. They will look after you right there. They're one of our sponsors, which means that we back them and support them 100%. And we can guarantee you that if you're looking for a professional ring and you're looking for a great service and great prices, Dunedeal Promotions have you covered in every single area. Before we head over to that interview with Esther Bray, promoter Simon Brown, I wanted to take a minute to call you, my beautiful listeners, to action. Talk to me. In your opinion, who would you say is the number one professional British wrestler in the UK today? Who would you say? And I say number one UK British because I know a lot of people are going to pull up Adam Cole. And it's like, well, look, no, Adam Cole is not from the UK. I'm talking British-born UK British professional wrestler on the scene. Get on the Twitter at 88 Smiles Per Hour. Get on Facebook /88 Smiles Per Hour. Check us out on the website www.88smilesperhour as well, and let us know your thoughts. Who, in your opinion, is the number one UK-born British professional wrestler in the country? Go, 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 go now. Shropshire Wrestling, is it Shropshire Wrestling Alliance now? Still Shropshire Wrestling Alliance? Yeah. Shropshire Wrestling Alliance, promoter, announcer, commentator, personality, authority figure, all of the things. Simon Brown, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. A man of many hats, I think, is the
I was thinking about it, I was like, what do I say? Has he got his hand in all the pies? And I thought that could be quite negative. So, you know, is he a man with many books? I was like, how do I describe this guy?
Many hats.
Man of many hats.
You're
a man of many hats, but you have great hair, so why
are
you going to cover it with hats?
I actually don't suit hats either, so it's completely
fine. You don't actually own many hats, do you? No, you still have proverbial hats for all of those out there questioning whether Simon Brown is wearing a hat right now. He is not.
Nope.
I can confirm that. Simon, lots of things happening, big things happening with SWA. Anyone who's not been to SWA yet, I'm pretty sure at some point somebody's going to, because more and more people are taking notice of SWA now. More and more people are taking notice of the product. However, we are going to get to all of that, but there are humble beginnings, as there are for everybody. So talk to me a little bit about your first experiences with wrestling. You know, the age-old story is, oh, I watched this pay-per-view and I saw this wrestler and I wanted to be a wrestler. So, like, I'm pretty sure you have a story that is pretty much like that.
Yeah, I do indeed.
What was your first experiences with wrestling?
Actually, it was kind of through my granddad. And we sort of lived in Telford. He sort of lived Somerset, you know, about 3-4 hours down south. And every now and again, you know, I sort of go around and we just watch, you know, sport on TV. And one day we turned on to wrestling and, you know, he's watching WWF as it was then. Ooh. Sort of I think it was late 1998, early 1999. So I got into it a little bit later than most people. And we ended up, I think the first pay-per-view I ever watched was actually, it was in the build-up to SummerSlam 1999. And it was Jesse the Body Ventura was the enforcer. And it was originally going to be China as a number one contender. And it ended up being Mankind versus Triple H versus Steve Austin in the main event.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know where you were going with that. I was like, oh, I know, because I didn't start watching wrestling until at least 2001.
Oh, right, okay.
So I'm even later than you.
Yeah, it was that entire build-up, and I was just fascinated, because that was during the Attitude Era, and everybody was very kind of larger than life. They had their own characters, and it was incredible, you know. I was like 11 at the time, you know, so watching stuff like that at that kind of age was great, and then, you know, he used to, you know, send me a load of VHS tapes that he'd recorded. He used to record Raw. It was during the time when Live Wire was still a Saturday morning show.
And
Michael Cole with his terrible hair still used to, you know, stand in front of all these video screens and that kind of thing. There was all that as well. You know, he used to send me all that. And then gradually we kind of realised that when Cartoon Network finished on cable, TNT began.
Oh, yeah.
And ECW were there. So we used to watch ECW as well, and that was an entirely different ball game completely. Yeah. Especially in 1999, RVD and Sabu and Rhino just kicking each other's ass, kicking shit into each other. It was incredible. And my mum was really against it because, you know, oh, it's far too violent, far too violent. But I was like, you know what, this is ace. and then, you know, sort of flash forward a couple of years, I was hooked, you know, for years and years and years and years. Went to my first actual live show was actually TNA, their very first UK tour when they came to Coventry Sky Dome.
Yeah.
The main event was Booker T versus Samoa Joe, which, meh.
Is that Booker T was doing his Booker fucking African
It was, image? Yeah. Fuck actually it, was, yeah.
What was that?
And earlier in the night, I saw it was AJ Styles versus Doug Williams versus Jay Lethal.
Oh, I wrestled Doug Williams, if you didn't.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Did you? Oh, funny you should say that, because we had Doug Williams at SWA.
Oh, yeah, you did.
And
did
we also had Jay Lethal quite recently at SWA as well. Amazing. So, but there you go. There you go. Look at that for a link, eh? And that was a match that was like, you know what? Live wrestling is stunning.
Yes.
That match blew me away.
Yes.
It was for the exhibition title and it finished. I think Williams had done a Chaos Theory and he kind of rolled through and then AJ just picked up Jane, the stars clashed him and pinned him. And I was like, what a finish to a match. That entire show was awesome. And I was hooked from there, basically. You know, sort of live wrestling, you know, went to a few more live shows. And then in terms of me getting into wrestling, my granddad had died and sort of I wanted to kind of do something, you know, into wrestling, you know, sort of, I don't know, you know, involved in a particular way, basically.
Yeah.
And then my good friend, Mr. Joe Wakely, otherwise known as Jerry Osborne,
Joey Star.
Yeah.
Probably doesn't know.
He was at EDW, which is in Shrewsbury, which I hadn't heard about until, you know, he kind of mentioned it to me.
Yeah.
I believe you were at EDW at the time as well. I think my first show, actually, it was you and him tagging in the main event.
Yeah, he also got me into EDW as well. He was kind of like, oh, you know, let's tag here. So,
yeah.
Joey did something good for people. And it's hard to believe, but Joey did good things for people.
Yes.
He's great now, though.
I'm
not, you know, he was a prick then, but you're great now, Joey.
So, yeah, he kind of got me into that, and then, you know, I liked the shows that they were doing. It was when they were at Shrewsbury College in the old sports hall.
I remember that.
You know, really, really fun shows, you know. And then he decided he was running a show in Shifnal, which is about 20 minutes over from Telford. And he didn't have a ring announcer. And he asked me if I wanted to do it. I'd never done it in my life. I had no experience. You know, I had a little bit of public speaking experience, that kind of thing, but nothing major. And he asked me to do it. And I was like, you know what? Okay, let's go for it. So we did that show. That show had like 250 people on the show. It was packed, absolutely rammed in Shifnal. He flyed the hell out of it. Very, you know, really, really good show. And that was my first ring announcer experience job. People in EDW were sat in the crowd watching the show, and they actually asked me to be their permanent ring announcer that same night as well. And it just kind of went from there.
So it gradually graduated from sort of like, this person said something to this person, and then you did this, and that person saw you, and yada yada. It's how wrestling works, really.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. It's who you know. It's who you know.
So, like, when growing up, who was your favorite wrestler? Who was that guy?
I mean, I talked a lot about WF and ECW.
Yeah.
But in terms of my favorite wrestler, always Sting.
Always
Sting.
Still Sting now.
It is still Sting now, actually. Yeah, yeah. Always. There was just something about him, you know. Even when he had like his, you know. Obviously, I got into him when he was kind of Crow Sting, when he had the long black hair and stuff like that. But I actually went back. But I actually went back and watched a few of his older stuff, you know, when he was kind of Surf Sting. And he was just awesome. Just everything about him, very mysterious when he was Crow Sting and kind of not really kind of knowing what he was going to do and descending from the sky with the cable and just awesome. And even now, you know, he's such a great figurehead, and he's never had any controversy and that kind of thing, and he's...
Yeah, it's a weird one. He seems to have kept outside of that political box, hasn't he? I mean, I've never really heard, like, anything, oh, Sting was involved in this person getting screwed or whatever, but when I first saw Sting, he was doing the Crow thing, and I remember as well, I remember seeing him, he'd come down on the wire from the rafters.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's pretty awesome. Like, but I never really... I mean, by the time I started watching wrestling... like WCW was kind of like they were pretty much done.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So like I didn't really know anything about Sting, and then he obviously joined TNA. I didn't know anything about him then. But it's not even a weird choice. Like people give it. I always ask this question to every single person I have on, but it's never a weird. No one's ever given me anything really strange. Like, oh, who's your favorite wrestler? Tajiri, and Tajiri is amazing. But I've never like all the names I get are always veterans or legends of the business, and I can always relate to them in some way because I think Sting is brilliant, but Did you used to paint your face and stuff?
No.
What? What?
Never to that extent. I had like a little sting mask.
Oh, yeah, you get the little plastic mask.
Yeah, I had a little sting mask. But I was never kind of like a super fan of anybody in particular. It was kind of never to the extent where I have to have my entire bedroom as like a sting shrine or anything like that. You know, it was always kind of, you know, I liked everybody in wrestling, you know, because they had a different character or because they had different intensity. Like, I was a big, you know, I was a huge fan of Ken Shamrock for a while just because of how intense he was. And I know, you know, slightly odd choice, but
it's a little bit odd.
I wasn't actually aware of his UFC background until after he kind of left, so when I was kind of watching him as a wrestler, it was like, this guy is just awesome. He's just kicking ass and putting an ankle lock on anything that moves, and it's just awesome. But yeah, I was never kind of a huge super fan of anybody in particular to the extent where I had to have every single thing Sting related, or every single thing Mick Foley related or anything like that. It was never to that extent, you know.
Fair enough. So obviously you started watching wrestling probably a lot later than most people. Not later than me. I started watching it a lot further into sort of the thousands. When you were sort of growing up and you were watching wrestling and stuff like that, I mean, did you ever want to be a wrestler? Did you ever aspire to be a professional wrestler?
Obviously, I think everybody does at some point. Yeah. You always do like your backyard stuff. You do stuff on the bed. You know, my little brother was quite into it. I mean, my little brother's 21 now, and, you know, as we were both kind of growing up, we both kind of got into it, and, you know, we kind of, you know, hitting stupid power bombs on each other and doing stupid things like that. But I never kind of thought, oh, you know what, I want to do something wrestling related, you know, kind of actually to be a wrestler. Hell, I never even thought, you know, I'd get to the point of being announced or that kind of thing. Cause, you know, I didn't know the British scene was going to turn into what it's become today. Do you know what I mean? But it was always a nice little, you know, interest and a kind of, you know, if it became a hobby down the line, then awesome. But I'm definitely not built to be a wrestler. I don't know if, you know, obviously, if people have ever met me, people will know that I'm definitely not built to be a wrestler. I have done a few training sessions at Kamikaze and with Joey Sanchez.
It's good to know how to take a bump.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
It's good. There's too many personalities out there taking bumps who don't know how to and kind of should. It's always good to know how to take a bump or two, you know? If for whatever. If you're going to be an on-screen, I'm doing that thing with my fingers, an on-screen personality, it's always good to know at some point one of you is probably going to take a shot or a bump.
Exactly.
All right, so you've sort of... You've been exposed to British wrestling. Was this when Joe sort of said, "Oh, you know, come down"? Was this your first exposure to British wrestling?
I've been to a few EDW shows before then. I think I've been to a couple. So I'd seen EDW. I knew of people like Edwards and, you know, the EDW guys. You know, the EDW mainstays. I knew of you through EDW, and I knew of, you know, a few other people and stuff like that. But in terms of, I guess, in a way, the Shifnal show almost was the beginning of SWA, because it kind of led from there. It kind of wasn't affiliated with SWA, but it was a Telford show.
Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, had that same kind of core roster on it. And, you know, it kind of was the beginnings of SWA to an extent. But before that, I'd not had any kind of UK exposure at all.
Okay.
Other than seeing people like British Bulldog wrestle.
Okay.
And, you know, and kind
obviously
of
EDW.
Yeah, yeah.
British Bulldog to kind of, Edwards.
Yeah, in the same sentence.
So you started ring announcing for, you did the Shifnal show, and you started ring announcing for EDW. I mean, I can't quite remember when, like, I can't really remember, like, when you came in. For me, I was thinking about this earlier, and I was trying to think, like, if I could remember, I can't remember EDW without you.
No.
It's really strange.
There was a time when it was Danny Davis, I believe, the guy who messed up quite a bit.
Isn't he the guy who normally films that?
Yeah.
Okay, actually, yeah, tell a lie. I broke said statement. I do remember EDW without you, but only now.
So for a while he ring announced. I think even Tom Campbell used to ring announce earlier on as well.
I don't know.
And when we transitioned to The Hive from Scat.
I remember the transition, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was like 2-3 shows after they went into The Hive that I took over.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember what the first main event I ring announced was for, or even what the first event was for, but it was very, very early.
It had to have been a combination of Edwards, Joey Sanchez or Jane Future. or Tommy Gunn or Joe Wakely.
Yeah, true.
Like, EDW main events are not hard to predict, very much so. ever. So, I'm saying that because, you know, so many people, they call these things to me. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, I'm pretty sure this is going to happen at EDW next week. And I'm like, fuck, like, is there a leak online or something? Like, you know, Edwards is going to turn. Oh shit, well, they know. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't fucking know. So you're there, you're at EDW. Like I said, I couldn't, obviously, just until now, remember a time at EDW where you weren't there. So you're doing these announcing gigs at EDW and you start SWA.
Yes.
So when and how and why, and talk me through the process of like, right, I'm going to start a promotion.
Yeah, I mean, that comes back to our friend Joe Wakely again.
Joe.
We sort of sat down, I think it was January 2012. It was probably just after New Year, and we were like, look, there's nothing in Telford. We've got all these guys at EDW and all these guys that we've worked with. You know, I did ring announcing elsewhere. I even ring announced a Carney show in Northampton, which was horrendous.
It's always an experience.
It was horrible. It was the worst thing ever. I did some work for Mad Dog Max at PWL, which I enjoyed. I even worked for New Scene Wrestling.
Oh, yeah, you did?
When it was that place that's now been...
That burned down.
That burned down building,
yeah.
Yeah. Comrades Club, yeah.
No.
Was it Comrades Club?
Was it? Could have been.
Yeah, the old Comrades Club, yeah.
It's
burnt. In Smethwick, yeah.
Yeah, it's ashes.
I did a few bits and bobs for them, and even NLW as well, you know. So I really announced in quite a few different places, you know.
Yeah.
And we came into contact a few times as well.
Through them.
And so, from there, kind of, we knew quite a lot of people that, you know, were quite local, that we knew were going to do a good job for us if we ran a show. And initially, we decided to run one show. It was going to be March 2012. Found a venue. It wasn't the biggest venue in the world. It was at St. George's Social Club, which probably about 110, 120 people it can seat.
Okay.
And we ran a show, and we sold it out. And it was like, this is pretty cool. We had the main event wasn't, you know, it was like a Rumble kind of, you know, the same kind of, you know. Just if you're running like
Rumble.
A one-off show, Rumble.
you're right.
Finish Rumble. But, you know, there were some good matches. We had Mark Morgan versus Jamie Future, which was awesome. We had some good tag team match. We had like a big four-team tag match to open the show with the Hunters and... D-Mac and Edwards, and you know, some really interesting kind of things on that. And then people were like, oh, when are you coming back? And I was like, well, we haven't got another show booked.
I didn't know if we were coming back.
We didn't realise that was going to happen. And then we ran another show in May, sold it out again. In fact, we actually ran out of chairs on that show. We went over the health and safety limit on that show.
Oh, naughty. You better be careful. The Brit Rest Police will be on to you.
Yeah, we had far too many people at that show. And again, that was another wicked show. And we had, I can't remember what the main event on that show was. Oh, it was LGT versus Joe.
Versus Joe, yeah.
So
I know because I went on these shows, but I was following them because I knew it was you guys. And I do remember that.
LGT versus Joe. And we had that. And then... we were like, okay, let's book like a year's worth of stuff and see how we get on, you know, run them sort of bi-monthly every 6-7 weeks. And July we had our title tournament. And the original plan was for it to be Lee Hunter winning the belt, and it was going to surprise everybody. And I was like,
Lee Hunter winning the belt.
Yeah, that was always the original plan, was for Lee Hunter to win the belt. And then we thought, you know what? What are we doing? The Hunters are phenomenal as a tag team, but no one in SWA knows them particularly well. And it's kind
of
like,
the area,
I didn't want to split the Hunter brothers up because they're having some really, really good tag team matches. You know, you know, it's not me saying that, you know, Lee wouldn't be an amazing champion, because he would be.
But the thing is, at that point in time, no one has seen them, and they're all, obviously for you as well, they're more... thing is, they're really good as individuals, but for me, some things you just don't break.
No.
And for me, you just can't split the Hunters.
No.
Couldn't do it. I could never do it. You can put them against each other in these exhibitions, shake each other's hand at the end.
Yeah.
But you can't break them. And if you put the title on Lee, I guess it would be a break. It has to be, essentially, wouldn't it?
And plus, you know, in the infancy as well, we were kind of running almost like self-contained shows. So we didn't really have a storyline that followed through.
Right.
It was always kind of the March show would be the show, and there'd be a storyline in that show, and it would kind of end at the end of that show. So the July show was actually the first time we were actually going to start a storyline running. And then we settled on Mark Morgan to be the champion because everybody expected Joe to walk out with that belt.
Yeah, I was there. I was on that show.
Yeah, yeah, which we'll talk about in a moment. everybody expected Joe to take the belt. Everyone expected LGT to take the belt. But when kind of Sol Adams screwed Joe in the main, it was in the qualifying match, and then Joe screwed Sol Adams back, and it was that kind of started that feud. And then the LGT versus Mark Morgan in the final, everyone expected LGT to win the title.
Yeah.
When Mark Morgan won it, the reaction we got was fantastic.
It was like,
shit, that actually worked. Okay.
It's good.
I went from there. But there's a match that you had as well. That was kind of your first SWA match, wasn't it? And it was originally going to be you versus Jerry Sanchez in a singles match, which I was really excited about.
Yeah, me too. And then it
was the night before, and we got told that Tommy Gunn was fit and ready to wrestle. And we brought in
lies.
And we brought in which it turned out he possibly wasn't as ready to go as he perhaps thought he was. Sorry, Tommy, I still love you, but
me too. But you're a lying motherfucker. You were not fit to go.
You were not ready to wrestle.
You were not ready to wrestle, mate.
No, I have that match on my computer at home, and it's quite painful.
It's bad.
It's quite painful.
I remember seeing that match, and I was like, yes, because me and Joey. We've had a good few. I think at one point I'd never wrestled anyone as much as I wrestled him.
Yeah.
And we can always have really good matches. And I had a good few matches with him. And I was like, right, fuck. I'm going to debut. I'm going to go against Joey Savage. This is going to be good. It's about time. These motherfuckers are booking all my friends, but they're not booking me. Why are you not booking me? Is it because I'm black? Simon Brown is not a racist. I'm telling you that now. Disclosure, Simon Brown is not a racist.
No,
at the time, I was using it as a reason to understand why I weren't booked. And I was like, right, he's a racist and he hates me. He hates black people. And so I was like, he's not booking me, but he's booking all my friends. You had the Duns on, you had Gav on. There was like so many people. And I was like, book me. And then you book me and I'm like, right, he's giving me a good match. And then you change it into a tag. And I had no idea who Scorpion was. And I was like,
neither did I that.
He's going to be a complete fucking rotter because his name is Scorpion. And I've got a tag with him. That's what I said to myself. This was before I even met him. I love Dave now, but before I met him, I was like, anyone who calls himself Scorpion is a rotter. And then I was like, Tommy Gunn is injured, and I didn't understand it. And I don't know if I asked you. I think I came to Joe.
Yeah.
I don't think me and you had much communication. I went to Joe and I said, what is this and why is it happening? And he said, oh, Tommy messaged us and told me he was fit. And I was like, right, okay, well, let's fucking do it then. Get there, plan this match. And Tommy's calling some stuff like, I'm going to run up your knee and jump over your head into a fucking Hurricanrana, then I'm going to do a dive and all this shit. And I'm like, Tommy Gunn 100% can do this. But I believed he was 100%. Then we go out there and Tommy, he's got no support in his arm. Right. Couldn't move anything. He's jumping and trying to throw people around. I smashed my head against the apron to save him on the dive as well.
Yeah.
And so I was pretty pissed off at the end. I was really fucked off. I just walked out of there. I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, Dave was I wouldn't say he was clueless, but he was a bit like, what do I do? I remember I tagged him at one point, and he was like, what do I do? And I was like, heat, bro, heat. And for anyone who doesn't know what heat means, heat is when the bad guys beat on the good guys. And I was like, heat. And I was standing there, and I was gritting my teeth so hard, because I was like, this is fucking ridiculous. And I kept catching Joe with my eyes. I just keep giving him that look, like, what the fuck is going on? And then Tommy fell, and I was like, then Tommy did the dive and nearly killed himself. And I was like, no, this is so bad.
Yeah,
I was really annoyed.
No, I can imagine. we never speak of that. Let's never speak of that match ever
again. That match didn't happen.
That match, yeah. I might even erase it from my hard drive when I get home. Delete it from my life. And then, yeah, we were approached by a different venue owner who said, look, I've got a bigger venue, because we were kind of outgrowing St. George's pretty
I remember, you had people sitting on the stage and everything.
Yeah, it was getting a bit silly. And we moved to the dojo, which was Kaishinkai Dojo, which was, the space was incredible.
Yeah.
The amount of space we had to do stuff. I don't think you were on that show.
I started it, I came back. Yeah, because I didn't come back until the answers.
Yes, yeah.
And Stice.
Yeah, obviously you were so unhappy with that match, you didn't come back.
Well, I was told that I wasn't... See, now, I was told that I weren't getting booked again because apparently I swore in the tag. Joe told me this.
Joe, okay.
And Joe's probably a line different cunt on this one. But he said to me that that I'm not booked in this new venue, this dojo place, because the owner was at that show, and I stuck my middle finger up to somebody... And he saw that and said, you can have the venue, but not if you book the brown guy.
Wow.
Ask Joe Wakeley. That is exactly what Joe said. If I'm wrong, Joe, feel free to tell me, but I've still got the mess to do, so I'll put you out there anyway. But that's exactly what he said.
Wow.
But apparently, because I stuck my finger up, if you wanted to have the venue, you couldn't have it if you booked me. That's what I was told. I remember coming to you way after that and talking to you about it, and you had no idea. But that's what Joe told me.
Right.
Joe told me that I swore, and the guy who owned the new venue wouldn't let me in. And so that's why I didn't come back until the Amps dies.
Okay.
So I never knew anything about the dojo. So tell us about the dojo and those shows. Yeah, I actually had no idea what happened on those ones.
I mean, it's still quite early days. I wasn't overly kind of knowledgeable of what, in terms of the booking sort of side of things, you know. I was kind of Joe's understudy in the kind of the early days, and we moved to the dojo. I thought the space was incredible. The potential for it was fantastic, and everything that the venue owner promised us was awesome. And we went and looked around it, had a nice backstage area, had a great space. The lighting was really, really nice. We could make it nice and intense and atmospheric. And it was great. First show we ran there, I think we drew about 180, which I thought was really, really good.
Really,
really cool. We started a little program with the Hunters and Sanchez and Tommy, who was fit by that point.
He was fit by that point.
And they were having really, really good matches. The main event on that show was Jamie Future, Mark Morgan in the first title defense.
Okay.
And it was great. Great match. Great, you know, great way to finish. And we even had this little spot because it's like a martial arts dojo.
Yeah.
They had like a UFC cage in the corner.
Oh, okay.
And we had a spot where Mark Morgan threw Jamie Future into the UFC
ring. I heard about this.
Ring, and it was cool.
This.
Yeah.
I didn't know he threw him in.
Yeah, actually, he threw him into the cage and stuff like that. Yeah, it was a really good, really, really good show. And, you know, the venue owner was really, really happy. And we ran, bizarrely, I don't know why, we ran a charity show the show after that, thinking that all our profits would go to charity, and didn't draw. It was a really strange sort of event, and it was odd. It had a really, really good card.
Yeah.
It had Eddie Dennis versus Gav on the show.
Yeah.
In a really, really good singles match. Yeah. No one was quite aware of who they were in SW at the time, but they came and they just exploded, and they were really, really good. The main event had an incident, which it was like a false count anywhere match.
Okay.
LGT Mark Morgan false count anywhere.
Yeah.
And it had a little incident involving like a guardrail, and the guardrail kind of fell, and it kind of almost hit
a kid.
Yeah. Hit a kid in the face, and it was a bit of a heated situation, but luckily we managed to, you know, defuse it pretty, pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And it was just a bit, you know, from that point on, we just thought maybe we need to just rein it back a little bit. That was also the show that had the Mark Morgan balcony dive on it.
Okay.
Which was ridiculous as well, to be honest. Stuff, and from that point, we had kind of had a little think to ourselves. We thought maybe we need to sort of reel it in a little bit.
More kid friendly, maybe. Less risque.
I think we were getting a bit edgy by that point. And then we only actually ran 3 shows at the dojo. I actually didn't go to the last show of 2012 because I was actually ill.
Okay.
It was the first ever Gold Rush show, first ever Gold Rush Rumble. So Joe ran it by himself.
Okay.
Still to this day, I actually don't know what happened entirely on that show. I know that sounds really, really bad. But still to this day,
I saw
they had a match. It was Joey Sanchez and Tommy Gunn.
Yeah.
They were teaming up as the Young Guns versus NRG.
Okay.
Sean and Jack,
who
in the early days of SWA were like the best tag team there. They were so young, but they could do it all. They were really, really good. And they had that, and they had a really, really good match. I saw the footage of that, but I didn't actually see anything else.
Okay.
I knew that Joey had this injury gimmick sort of going on. I knew he was coming back to return and to win the Rumble. Okay. That had been in place for months.
Yeah.
But I didn't know what happened after that. Apparently he turned heel on that show, even though it was going to be a slow turn. I don't know how that happened or what happened at that point.
No.
But I was out of the loop by that point because he was like, you're not going to be at the show. I was still a little bit kind of tail between my legs about the incident at the last show. I was still a little bit kind of hesitant. And if I'm honest, it put me off a little bit.
Okay.
So I sort of stepped back a tiny little bit. And I did have every intention of coming to the show, but I was actually ill for the entire sort of week. So I didn't end up making it down to the show anyway. There are some people that will tell you that. One person who we don't talk about here, who's an ex-girlfriend of mine, and she but yeah, she was there.
Exposed. Well, just going to Simon Brown is not gay.
Definitely.
It was a she. However, she cannot be named. No. She's like the female version of Voldemort.
For legal reasons, yeah.
For legal reasons. She's not a convict. Anyway, go on.
So I don't quite know what happened on that show still to this day. And then something happened between Joe and the venue owner that resulted that resulted in us moving venue. And we'd always looked at the Anstice, which is this, you know, it's quite an old building. It's like an old kind of social club downstairs, but it had a really nice space upstairs. Yeah. It had been around since like the late 1800s, I think, from what I can understand. Looked a bit of the history of it. And the space was incredible. They used to run boxing events up there all the time. So it was perfect for us. It had a nice backstage area, had a really nice stage. As of February 2013, that's kind of where we went. And we ran the first show. I kind of came back into the fold from there, but Joe had already booked the show. And he had Soraya Knight on the show. By that point, I think he'd moved to Norwich by that point.
He just brought WAW with him.
He was certainly involved in Norwich by that point, whether he'd actually fully moved there or not. But he was in talks with Soraya. So Soraya came down. And the original plan was to have Frankie Sloan in the main event against Mark Morgan.
Yes.
Which would have been a really good match.
Yeah, it would have been.
However, we had another promotion kind of pour rank on us a couple of days before and take Frankie off our show. And so we ended up, it was still a really good old school match. It was Keith Myatt as his replacement.
Oh yeah.
Which I was really, really happy about. Keith had been on SWA before, really, really happy about it. And so we ran that. That was a really, really good draw, considering it was the first show in the first, you know, in the brand new venue. Mm. Very, very good draw for us. Saw a lot of new people come through the door that show. And we made a nice bit of profit on that show actually as well, which was really kind of humbling going into. It was like our first anniversary show was Inception.
Yeah.
And if I'm honest, that show almost got cancelled the day of the show because of the weather. Because the weather was so bad. That was a day that we had the worst snow I've seen for a long, long time. March.
Yeah, I remember this.
And the weather was so, so bad. And I even struggled to... I drove like 10 minutes from my house to the photographer's house to pick them up. And that took me half an hour, and I was like, "This show isn't happening. We're gonna get no one's gonna turn up."
Yeah, you said that.
Very, very close to getting pulled. Ran the show, still had a really, really good turnout actually.
It was
which
I remember all of this, man.
Amazed me. Mad Dog Matt's got a concussion, which was good fun. And yeah, the entire show was great, and that was the full Jerry Osborne heel turn, which resulted in a really, really hard chair shot to the head of Mark Morgan.
Yes! I was so angry with that.
Yeah.
I get really annoyed with things like, okay, it did what it was supposed to do, but I was like, no, just no. Yeah. But I remember that.
Really, really hard.
I love having these conversations with people because it takes me back to times that, because obviously so much has happened in wrestling in general in like the last year and for like for me and promotions and everyone else. It's always nice to go back.
Yeah,
like, just to remember, yeah, remember that.
Yeah, it's the hardest chair shot, and it was just like, whoa. I was sat in the back, and it's like, shit.
Yeah.
Shit. It was, you know, it did what it needed to do, and it kind of made people stand up and think, wow, okay. That was the night that G. John Chase aligned himself with Osborne as well, so that was the start of that. That was the start of that kind of story that kind of went forward, and... by that point as well, Joe was kind of living in Norwich, so he kind of handed a lot of it over to me. And I was still a little bit kind of unsure about booking. I still maybe wasn't quite 100% about, you know, like direction or things like that. And I was kind of bringing people in. I think the May show was when you came back.
Yeah.
And you wrestled Eddie, I think, in your first match back.
My first match at the Anstice.
Your first match at the Anstice.
I think it was.
You wrestled Eddie in your first
match. I remember,
which was a great match. And then we had Damien Dunn came back on that show as well. We had some really good matches on that show as well. And that was my first kind of show that I'd run.
Mm.
almost
that sort of as you've come back into the fold now,
yeah,
more sort
yeah.
of like the booking side of things as well.
Yeah, and obviously he, you know, he sort of moved off to Norwich by that point, you know, so he was unavailable for a large part of the time. And, you know, in terms of promotion, it was down to me and a couple of other guys as well. You know, obviously, you know, he still come back when he could, but a lot of the time it was down to kind of me to sort of take command, which is when you started seeing the change. I think that's kind of when you started seeing like a different. You know, I've always been an indie wrestling fan. And by that point, I was really into my Ring of Honor, I was really into my Chikara, I was really into PWG, and I wanted to, you know, I still wanted to retain the family side of things, I still wanted to retain those characters that, you know, that had served us really, really well. You know, even people like, you know, like Saul Adams and Red Dragon and LGT and guys like that.
Red Dragon.
Do you remember Red Dragon?
Red Dragon.
Red Dragon was awesome for us in the first year of SWA.
Red Dragon.
Red Dragon, Ian Rogers.
Ian Rogers.
Yeah.
Mr. DDP Yoga.
Yeah.
Eat your mama's yoga. Ian Rogers, eat your mama's yoga.
And yeah, so yeah, he gave us a great service. You know, I still wanted to retain those kind of characters, but at the same time, bring a much more athletic side of things, which is where you came back into the fold.
Yeah.
And we actually used you properly.
Shock
horror.
Shock promoters. Some people do know how to use Ryan Smart properly.
And Eddie Dennis, who I've been a huge fan of Eddie Dennis for years and years.
That was really good. That was up until I wrestled Chris Brooks, which actually really surprisingly, it seems like all the best matches I have are at SWA.
Oh, well.
Because the only match that I wrestled Eddie at that show.
Yeah.
And that was like my best match.
Yeah.
And then I wrestled Eddie again at Attack in Bristol.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that was a good match. And then the only match that ever took over me and Eddie was me and Chris Brooks, which I had at SWA. Then the only match that then beat that was me and Pete versus Chris Brooks and Nixon at SWA.
Oh, yeah, SWA, yeah.
And then the match that beat that was me and Pete versus Chris versus Steph again at SWA.
Yeah.
And obviously I wrestled Damien yesterday, but that's singles action. But SWA seems to be the place where I feel like I have some of my favourite matches always at SWA.
Good, I'm glad.
That was a good one. That was like, when you brought me back and I had that match with Eddie, I was like, okay, these guys know what's going to happen here. Do you know what I mean? Rather than booking me against someone that's, you know, I'm not compatible with.
Yeah,
I
guess.
And I love the venue. Like,
the venue was great. Nice high ceiling. All the noise kind of transcend. Oh, yeah, that's where we had the light suspended from the ceiling and stuff. Just made it really quite atmospheric.
Now, we all know, as much as you may want to deny it, there is a little bit of a cunt in each and every one of us. I don't give a fuck what you say. Each and every one of us have been a cunt, even if it's just going to Asda and picking up a packet of Jammy Dodgers, and there's a little rogue packet of Jammy Dodgers at the back that slips out and hits the deck, and those first six, maybe four, six biscuits have crushed just a little, and you pick them up, and you look to your left, and you look to your right, and you put them back on the shelf. We've all done that. Don't lie to me. And I know all you bitches, all you women, you go into fucking Topshop and you take shit off hangers and you don't put them back the way you found them. That's being a cunt. However, here at 88 Smiles Proud, being a cunt is a great thing. Because if you are a cunt, a K-U-N-T-S cunt, you are getting your professional wrestling gear from the very best. We have two great seamstresses sponsor us here at 88 Smiles Proud, and Custom Cunts is one of them. They take your dreams and they will stitch them into dream heaven. They can make your dreams reality. Send over all your designs. If you use Smile Design Studio, you may get a cheeky little discount. Whoop whoop, self-promotion. Check it out, guys. Custom Cunts. Head over to facebook.com/custom cunts or get them on Twitter at custom cunts1. That's it again. Custom Cunts 1. Check them out.
All the best matches I've had are at SWA.
Okay. Very, very
good. Oh, well.
Oh, well. I say that. Can we like sound loop that? Can I have it as a text tone?
Yeah, man.
Oh, well.
So the Ancestors is a good venue, you know, in terms of venues and how they go. It was a really good venue. You guys are running good shows. You're getting regular crowds who are invested in the product, they're invested in the characters, and most of all, they're buying the storylines. They're up to date, regular fan base. Then you move from the Anstice.
Yeah, I mean, before that happened, kind of, we had what is arguably one of the craziest matches we've ever had, which was the Duns versus
Duns
the
Duns versus Oms. Don't even.
We should talk about that first, I think.
Yeah, you can talk about that, because if I talk about that, I'm going to get in trouble.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Well,
I'm gonna get the Duns on at some point, and then hopefully they'll just let loose on that match.
Okay,
all
right.
The fans, I know the fans loved it.
The fans loved it, and when I first saw it, I loved it as well. However, now I'm a little bit more knowledgeable about the situation, I actually understand that maybe something else.
Yes,
maybe, you know, kind of viewed.
But
yeah, I want to get your opinion on it in a minute as well, because I'm interested to hear about your opinion on it as well. I know it's your podcast,
Ryan,
you should be asking me questions.
No, right?
It'll only be a Facebook status like your
Facebook.
But yeah, on the surface, that was the best thing we'd ever done in SWA. The craziest thing I'd ever done.
Mm.
And I don't know whether it was the adrenaline pumping that night or whether it was anything like that, but I actually thought that was our best match ever.
The thing is, a lot of people may agree, though.
Yeah.
Not now.
Not
when Jay Lethal and Tyler Bate hit the fucking ring.
But at the time, I thought that was probably one of the best, if not the best match we'd had.
The feedback said that.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But when you break it, when you break that match down, and you actually think, wait a second, that was a pretty one-sided match.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was a pretty one-sided match.
Which is not the way it should have been, considering that the hooligans were the visitors.
This is it. And, you know, all credit to Pete and Damien for kind of...
being professional about it.
You know,
sticking
with
it
and doing it. And not... you know, I didn't hear them, you know, kind of come to me afterwards and, you know, say anything about it, which is... Oh, all right.
Not you.
Okay, go on then. Let's get your take on it then. Go on.
Not you. Well, the thing is, look, the match was what it was. And I did watch the whole thing. And it for the fans, it was probably very entertaining, but they are looking at it from, they're looking at it through one scope. They're looking at it through their end of the lens.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it from a different side of the lens. You know, not only am I watching two of my best friends who at that point, when they were still quite solid as a team, were fast becoming one of the quickest and fastest and most promising tag teams. They were having solid matches with everyone.
Yep.
And you put them in with the hooligans, who again most people will say are the best tag team in the UK. I beg to differ, but that's my opinion, and if people don't like my fucking opinion, don't listen, I don't give a shit. But my opinion is that they're not the best tag team in the UK. The best tag team in the UK is the Hunter Brothers. And that's just my opinion. In terms of continuity, in terms of everything, the Hunter Brothers for me are the best. And at that point in time, I considered them to still be the best, but I considered that the Dunn Brothers were the hottest and like the fastest rising tag team at that point, and I think they were. And the hooligans just sort of like they came in and they did a real good job. You know, the fans love them. They have like great charisma.
Yeah.
They have a fantastic aura, and I think all that was great. Right from the entrance, I was digging them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the bell rang, and you know, I don't really know what happened. Like the opening spot is a hip toss into an RKO
it's like
cutter,
a
and I'm like,
powerbomb.
It's a hip toss into a powerbomb into a cutter.
Yeah.
And then from there, it was that match was not a no DQ, was it?
No.
Right.
No.
So therefore, the hooligan should have been disqualified.
The match should
first,
have ended in about
3 minutes.
Seconds.
In like the first 3 minutes, essentially, the hooligan should have been disqualified because one of them hit. Was it a tray?
It was a bacon tray.
There was a bacon tray shot, and Damien got suplexed onto over a table.
Over a table.
Pete got.
There was a clothesline on the chair.
Off the chair.
There was a stupid powerbomb.
There was a powerbomb
on
the crash mat on top of the ramp.
Which, to be fair, Pete sold like a fucking trooper.
Pete sold it. Pete sold that crash mat bump like it was thumbtacks, which was amazing. And I think at that point, what was happening is Pete was. Everyone's heard about the Shawn Michaels Hulk Hogan match.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's what Pete was doing. I think at that point, Pete was like, you know what? I'm just going to sell everything and oversell everything I'm dying.
Yeah.
That's not a confirmed thing. But for me, knowing Pete like I saw him and how he was taking everything, it was ridiculous. And I'm thinking, like, you know, okay, yeah, the fans are digging this and the fans are loving it and stuff. But there's going to be a big group of those fans who are sitting there thinking what I'm thinking, which is number one, why are we watching two of the locally built talent who in SWA at that time were premier talent being jobbed out by two guys in their debut? Why have they not been disqualified? A few people said to me, why were they not disqualified?
Yeah.
And it's like, you can't you can't treat the fans that know what they're looking for like they're stupid. Mm. You can cater to the kids with your woof, 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 woof and all that bullshit. That's all good and dandy, but when you start hitting people over the head with bacon trays in a match that has no disqualification stipulation,
yeah.
You're not just breaking the rules, but you're actually sort of like... you're almost disrespecting the general rules of wrestling in general. You're kind of like sort of like, well, okay, I'm in a singles match and it's not no DQ, but I'm going to do what I want anyway. Yeah. And that for me annoyed me, and it was very one-sided, like you said. And
yeah.
I just think it was a job out. They got completely jobbed out.
Yeah, I mean, that was never the intention of it, obviously. You know,
of course not.
It was always built as, you know, this amazing dream match, kind of thing. And yeah, if we had, you know, we had a run of good shows from there. We had the British Lions tournament when the British Lions belt came in, which has done great things for us, you know. And Damo's been champion since day one, since December 6th.
December 6th last year.
Last year.
So he's so he's well over a year, hasn't he?
No.
Oh, it's coming
up to a year, isn't it? Yeah. Damien. Coming up to a year. Yeah, he won.
Lucky I'm not in that tournament.
You know. Yeah, he won it at Gold Rush last year.
Oh yeah, he did.
Which was December 6th, the night where you became Mark Morgan.
Oh, so many memories.
I know, right? So many ridiculous things we did. Like, that entire show was just hilarious as well. It was good.
The thing is, you're running such good shows. And they were like, okay, yeah, you know, in my opinion, I felt like there was still a lot of dirty fat around
this
great rump steak at the minute.
Yeah.
And at some point, you know, once you do trim the fat down, you're going to get that beautiful piece of meat that you're looking for. But other than that, the shows were so fun, and they were just like... such a good atmosphere, and the crowds there, and see, this is the thing, like, a lot of people have said that, like, and I was saying this at Kamikaze,
yes,
just
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You were eavesdropping.
I don't have a lot of choice.
And a lot of people agree that SWA has the best crowd.
I will hands down say,
and I'm not saying this because you're in front of me, but SWA has the best crowd that I have ever worked in front of. And a lot of people would say, oh, well, isn't that like shit on PCW and Progress? Well, no, motherfucker, because I've not wrestled for PCW and I've not wrestled for Progress. So I'm talking about the crowds I've worked in front of, and they're really receptive. And that's why I think I really enjoyed them. And little things like me coming out as Mark Morgan, they're funny.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And you guys, like, you really... It seemed at that point... Was Joe still booking at that point?
I know, it was me booking at that point, and he was like... He was still involved quite heavily, but I was doing a lot of, you know, I was doing a lot of the booking sort of side of things. Mm. You know, for Gold Rush as well, having the whole Mark Morgan thing going on, because I knew that Mark wasn't going to be at the show.
Yeah.
And you'd had your little thing within the show before when.
Oh yeah, when I came out.
When you came out and beat the crap out of him to the extent when he had to get stretched out on a table.
Was it that one?
Remember that? No, it was a show before.
Yeah, but. Because there was one where I came out and attacked him.
That was,
and I did the 450 and destroyed
that was
my
the
knee
show at
before.
That was the show with the hooligans on. You did that.
Yes, and then there was the one where I beat the shit out of him, tombstoned him.
Yeah.
And then he was on a table and
threw pouring Stanley through the ramp.
And then everyone come out. I remember someone was like, oh, thanks for that, boys. I was like, well, so what? It's what we were asked to do. And then you've come round and you've done Gold Rush. And so now you've got SWA Championship, you've got British Lions Championship, you've got Damien Dunn, and who was your champion?
It was Osborne, but Gold Rush, that was the night that Sanchez
cashed in.
Went from number 1 to number 20, and then cashed in immediately,
right,
and won the belt.
So now you've got Sanchez and Damien Dunn, and you still have Sanchez and Damien Dunn.
We do.
You see? Sometimes, consistency works, boys. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? 1,500 champions in like 6 months, you know, you can't really do that.
And
so you've done these shows, and you have your last show
at the Anstoys was the first show of 2014, which was New Day, which was February. It was you versus Sanchez in the main event. Do you remember that one?
What?
Yeah, do you remember that? When Mark Morgan got involved.
Oh, the
Super
Code Breaker, right? Yeah. Fuck, I completely
forgot. So that was
shit. We had a match.
That was the last show at the Anstoys, and that was also the last ever event that ran at the Anstoys, because it closed like a week later.
Really? Why did it close?
Yeah. The council and the committee that kind of owned the venue were very old school, like to the extent of women weren't allowed into their meetings.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how old the constitution was in place. It like. Hadn't changed. The constitution hadn't changed since like the 1930s.
Jesus Christ.
So, it was hemorrhaging money, just been running to the ground, which is such a shame.
Okay.
Because you know, we would have stayed there forever.
Yeah.
If we had the opportunity to. But it had kind of reached that point where it didn't have any money left, so it was closed. And
it's a good thing.
Well,
because then Dolly.
Exactly. But on that February show, we, up until about 4 days before, we didn't know where we were going. We had no home, and I was like, wow, this, there's not a lot of venues in Telford that would, you know, accommodate us, that would actually have wrestling, because like, it's really, really weird. I don't know if any of the promoters kind of experience it as well, but if you go around and look at a venue and they ask you what you're going to be doing in there and you say professional wrestling, they're always like, whoa, like, what?
Yeah.
But then when you actually explain it, and as soon as you try and get that concept over, they're like, oh, okay. But it's very hard to get that initial concept over. It's really, really strange to sort of, and you know, when we found out the outsides were shutting, we went around a few other places, and we went to this place in Oaken Gates, just been refurbished, really, really nice venue. And it was, would have been great for wrestling.
Yeah.
And we said, oh, what are the chances of us being able to have, you know, a wrestling show there? And she was like, oh, there's a disco ball on the ceiling. That would have to be taken down. That's another £100. And I was like, well,
what?
Would it?
Yeah.
If anything, that's going to help. Oh, wow. And she was, she was like really against it. So in the end, luckily, we found this venue had literally just reopened.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even like, we went to the meeting, myself and Joanna Rose went to the meeting.
Yeah.
It wasn't even finished at that point.
Oh, okay.
And we went to the venue and it was like, this is great. This is such a good space.
Yeah.
Lacking a bit of backstage area, but I think what we've done with it's worked pretty well for us. And yeah, it was fantastic. And we immediately knew that, you know, this was going to be a place. The people there were so nice, very, very accommodating. But yeah, the last show that we ran at the Anstice was in February, and that was the night, obviously, you were in the main event. And I think this is when the transition began and we started to bring new faces in.
Yeah.
That was the night that Tyler Bate debuted. That was the night that Chris Brooks and Jonathan Gresham debuted.
Yes.
That was the night that we kind of saw a different side of Marshall X as well, because he was in that tag match and he brought his own. That was the night where we saw you start coming into your own and coming through as this... You've almost turned yourself face by that point as well. And there were things like that, and then Damage was involved at that point as well. And
I'm not even gonna go there.
Okay, that's another story.
That's another story.
That's another podcast.
Forget that.
Itself. And people like that had kind of come through the door, and I think that was the transition for us. And we'd sort of started seeing a different type of fan come through the door as well. That really, you know, kind of respected what Tyler was doing. Really respected what Jonathan and Chris were doing.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're a casual fan, no one will have maybe heard of Jonathan Gresham because he's not.
No, it's true. It's true.
You know, he's with CCW, Chikara, Dragon Gate, that kind of thing.
Nobody at SWA would have known who he was.
But a lot of people in the crowd did their research.
They will do.
They did their research. That's the point I was trying to get across about how the fans are so receptive, and they'll actually go out and they'll actually be like, "Well, okay, this guy is pretty good. Bring him in," or "This guy's ace. You know, this guy was really, really cool last show. Maybe, you know, we should do this match." And it's like, you know, I do listen to what they say. You know, anything they put on Facebook, like, that's something else I love about our audience as well. They're so active on Facebook.
Yeah.
And they do so much for us as well. They're always commenting. They're always putting their opinion across, which is what I love. And, you know, I do look at every single thing they put up. And some of them, they have influenced sometimes what I've done with matches, which I think is the best way to do it sometimes, you know. So anyway, hopping back... to the new venue at Dorley Town Hall. People there were absolutely fantastic, very, very welcoming. There was a bar there. There was a really nice changing area, which we managed to sort out ourselves. And Inception was kind of taking shape anyway. But that was the first show that I really thought, wow, okay, we can do something pretty ace.
So that is all the time we have today in this here episode of 88 Smiles Proud with SWA promoter Simon Brown. However, you can get part two of that podcast very soon. In the next couple of days, it'll be available, as well as this podcast, which is available on Android, iTunes, Podomatic, and Surefire, as always, on our website, www.88smilesperhour.com, where you can also find a special feature on one of our sponsors, the Two Merch Girls. You can find out everything there is to know about the two girls behind it, why they believe that merching ain't easy, but they're the ones who are making it easy for you. Check out the Two Merch Girls special sponsor on www.88smilesperhour.com, and you can click on the sponsors link there. And remember, support the podcast if you can. Support the podcast if you want. If you're buying off Amazon, make sure you use our Amazon banner at the top of the page too. So for now, this is all we have time for. However, like I said, we have LGT, aka Tom Roos, on WrestleMillions promoter, on our next show. And here's a few little teasers of what you can expect from that once we get done with part two with Simon Brown.
That was when FCW was at its peak. Okay. When you had those talents all came through the doors. Yeah.
When it was better.
Yeah, we're not going to go into that though. Well, we might do, but you never know.
So thank you very much for listening, guys. Be sure, if you haven't already, to check us out on Facebook, /88smilesperhour. Follow us on Twitter at 88smilesperhour2. And remember, haters are always gonna hate. For now, I'll see you next time. Ciao, ciao.